Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen. I'm your host and producer, Richard Martindale, and with me, as always, is Ian Shaw.
Hello, happy quarantine.
And Patrick Weaver.
This is our first episode in, like, a ridiculously long time.
Three and a half months for all of us. 3 months for me and Ian since, I guess, beginning of January or right before January?
Oh, yeah, because the last one we did was the anime episode, right?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I could see from our Discord channel, too, the last couple of, stuff we talked about and, things we posted, in November, the Pearl Harbor picture and stuff. Nice. It's just, oh, man, that was a lot. That was a while ago. But
we're so good at this.
Yeah, man. Happy quarantine.
And a happy quarantine to you, Richard.
Yep. So we recently did our fantasy baseball draft for our League of Mediocre Gentlemen League. And, today, for anyone tuning in for anime, video games, or other hobbyist or entertainment sort of things, you can tune out because this is going to be all baseball and all specifically fantasy baseball. But yeah, guys, we did our fantasy baseball draft Saturday.
Hooray!
Yeah, it'll be nice to see when we can see these players actually in action. Hopefully sometime this year.
Yeah, really. Hopefully in the April, was it the end of April, beginning of May? I think May 7th?
I think that's being overly optimistic.
Tentatively, that was the one they were tentatively, as of this recording, I think that was the one they have.
I've heard from different sources that they're going to need 3 weeks of spring training before an opening day. So, and if they're not going to start baseball operations until that May date, then we're looking at June.
Maybe, but some teams like the Yankees are playing inside their facility or whatever, getting warmed up and ready to go at a moment's notice.
The Blue Jays general manager I read said that they're going to need at least 4 weeks. So,
jeez. Meanwhile, the Red Sox are just drinking beer and eating chicken wings, right?
Wow.
Pretty much.
Why don't you de-age your jokes?
Speaking of people who haven't watched baseball in 3 years.
Jesus Christ, that's an old joke. Half of our audience won't even know what you're talking about.
It wouldn't be relevant until right now of just sitting on their asses and not doing anything.
Pretty much.
But,
it's
sorry,
like my life right now.
I interrupted you, Pat.
I did go for a run today.
Nice.
I saw the outside, smelled the fresh air. It was great.
And you did not catch the cold?
Well, I mean, if I did, you'll know in a week, so.
Perfect. I expect you to spread it to all your friends and neighbors.
Spread
that
it around.
That is what I also expect.
Let's not do that. The League of Mediocre Gentlemen podcast does not endorse willfully spreading the color.
So did you hear about those guys in Virginia? It was.
Yeah, I saw coughing on produce, yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking idiots.
What assholes? But that's my produce.
Don't worry, your local Walgreens or whatever it was, their employees were on it. They took all the produce and threw it away. And
did they beat the kids that were doing it?
They called the cops, who then took them home and lectured their parents. Apparently that's what happened.
And they determined they didn't have criminal intent.
The system works.
Apparently.
All right, guys, let's dive into our draft results for this fantasy baseball. So for those tuning in for the first time and don't know anything about our little fantasy league, it's a 12-team mixed league. We have 6 keepers that inflate every year based on how long you've kept them. Each starts with 0 on the first year.
Whoa. You're the worst at explaining things. Each of our keepers is assigned a round that they are kept in. So it's not just taking the 6 best players on your team. You have to gauge value. So you keep them in a draft position and you lose that draft pick for whatever season that is.
Correct. So if you, for instance, Chris Paddock, I kept in the 26th round. Next year, he will inflate to the 24th round, and then he will inflate to the 21st round, and so on and so forth. Yes, you're right. We have weird stats, or at least additional stats.
Not that weird.
It's not that weird. OPS, pretty common one, actually. A lot of people like the on-base percentage plus slugging. And then we have saves/holds, which gives the relief pitchers a little bit more punch, and equally so, strikeouts to walk ratio is the other stat. The rest are pretty much standard rotisserie style stats, runs, stolen bases, average, blah, blah, blah. So, I think that's everything in terms of our weird house rules and stuff. Oh, when they inflate, last but not least, once you hit the first round, you have to start picking your players. Before that, everyone kind of bumps up the player along the way, but if they all start hitting round one, they don't bump down. And there is no round zero, so that's when you have to choose to throw somebody back. So
what Richard is trying to say is if you have two players that would be kept in the same round, then one of them gets bumped up to the round before. You are literally the worst at explaining things.
I thought that was pretty...
Patrick, did that make sense? Did what Richard say make sense, Patrick?
Yeah, no problem.
Whatever. Anyway, that's our league.
It's worked for 11 years.
It's worked for... Well, I mean, it's gone through a lot of changes. That's now at this point because of the 11 years of work that we put into it. So,
yep. And three commissioners.
And three commissioners, yeah.
Three different commissioners, 11 seasons, a lot of different players. It's expanded. It used to be a 10 team, now it's a 12. That's how successful we are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. A lot of screaming.
Well, remember, like, the first time we ever did this keeper draft, we did it on a piece of paper that I pinned up on the wall in my apartment.
Yep. And then we got a big marker board, which made it a little easier. And then each year we get a little easier.
Yeah, and then the Google Doc that we did for years. And now, finally, we moved into the 21st century and had an online draft client that could accommodate our crazy format.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that for a second, Richard. So do you feel that your draft experience was better this year than last year?
Oh, yeah. I think that, at least for me personally, I can't say about the rest of you guys, but I thought that it was a whole lot less stressful for me to... I didn't have to zigzag through a bunch of stuff. I didn't feel like I was taking 15 minutes to pick a draft because I was catching up on editing the big board and checking off who was still available and who wasn't and trying to keep up with everything. I enjoyed that Yahoo had an ability to put our keepers into the rounds they were being kept at. There was a minute of a scare there in the beginning when we thought that it was not going to do that and it was going to front load them like ESPN stupidly does. But no, I thought it was fine. Increasing the time between drafts to 2 minutes gave, I think, everyone the chance to do their little harangues and snipes and things that we all enjoy doing during the draft. And then we all got to move on with the rest of our lives once the draft was over.
Cool.
What about you guys? I know there was a lot of controversy about moving to this kind of a draft format.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. It's just... The only gripe I had about the entire thing, and at the time it was a really big deal, but it afterwards it just seems like such a small thing, is that for whatever reason, the 12 of us can never get on the same page, like, ever. I don't understand why we have such a problem with that, because about a month ago, we decided to move from our Discord to Reddit, which people have been doing... Little by little, all right?
They've been dragging their feet.
And so we decided to make the Master Keeper information thread and keep it updated so that we can do it that way. Well, so people also are dragging their feet putting stuff in there. And then
there was a lot of people who really didn't want to come up with keeper decisions or even look at them. Despite the fact that we are all living in a coronavirus world right now and no one has anything better to do than to sit at home and look at a computer screen.
Right. And so that's all well and good. But then, like, when people started deciding to use it, they also still didn't actually use Reddit. Instead of going, oh, there's a mistake on this chart, maybe we should make a post. That's how Reddit works, and say... There's a mistake on this chart. Let's correct it. They just messaged you and didn't tell anybody else. And you guys just kind of fix it yourself and, oh, it's fine. So here we are, like, round nine.
James figured it out day of that Ian's keepers. We had inflated Shane Bieber when he had not been kept. He was, he was supposed to be in the ninth round. Now, this was not a big deal for literally anyone except for Patrick, who was using Fantasy Pros. And Fantasy Pros freaked the fuck out on him because it was, like, screwing with his, like, rankings. Because there should not have been Shane Bieber. He had a Shane Bieber in the seventh. And Shane Bieber went to the ninth with Benj Gliber-Torres to the eighth. And, like, the whole ranking thing just, like, completely skewed itself because of that.
Right. And, like, to be clear, the only way I feel like this worked as well as it did, and I also feel why Ian had such struggles, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, is because the years I've done Fantasy Pros, which I've enjoyed a lot, I did it manually. Like, I enter in all the picks manually. And I also did it this year based upon our ESPN settings. So as I was putting people in, it was comparing all the players to our actual categories, unlike in Yahoo and what Ian was doing with his draft, like where it was syncing, yeah, but it was giving all of his advice and showing all the rankings and everything based upon Yahoo numbers, which I couldn't give two shits about because the categories were all wrong and everything. So
To be fair, in our Yahoo League, I've added a couple stats because I wanted to see how the year plays out, if we ever get a year, how the year plays out with these other stats in case we want to incorporate them. Ian has long pushed for either quality starts or innings pitched is a replacement for wins, so I put both those stats in there. I, out of shits and giggles, I put in net stolen bases, which I think could potentially help speedsters get a little bit more edge on power. We'll see. And then we've also long talked about splitting on base percentage and slugging, although I think the idea is to replace average with on base percentage. So just to kind of see how it all falls down, I'm gonna keep checking in on the Yahoo side just to sort of see where the stats are kind of falling, but just kind of see how I would adapt in the mental mind game that goes in with these stats. As a result, Yahoo's little rankings were a little all over the map because of the fact that these are not stats that we have in our ESPN league. Because after this draft, I had to input all these into the ESPN league because, unlike Yahoo, ESPN has 2-week playoffs. And while Yahoo had pretty good format for a lot of things, they did not have that one. And that was really annoying because it feels a lot more special when you have to go against an opponent 2 weeks straight. A little bit more emphasis on that final, the finale. So
cool.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of just like blew through you right there on the interruption.
You're good. I feel like everything went fine. Like I said, that was really the only issue that I had was just that little hiccup, and it kind of led to me picking a player there that I didn't really want. Like, that's the round I drafted Germaine Marquez. And, I mean, it wasn't exactly the worst pick on the planet. Unless I brought it up, you wouldn't look at it and say, oh, man, what the fuck was he doing? But, like, still, I looked at the guys around him and everything, and after I kind of settled myself again, and it's like, damn it, I really shouldn't have picked him.
Yeah, luckily, I think a lot of people had a pick like that. Some of them multiple times. let's talk about our overall feelings on the draft. Like, before getting specifics about why we're feeling these ways, Pat, you and I have talked a bit, so let's talk with Ian. How, going into the draft, what was your plan, and then how do you feel looking at your team right now? Honestly, no, like, we all have our own jokes inside, but what do you think, Ian?
I guess contextually, a lot of what determines success and failure in our league are the keepers. And because of the particular keeper system that we have, sometimes you do, but you don't just typically look at the six best players on your team and automatically keep them as you would in a lot of keeper leagues. In ours, it's very important to weigh value. So, for example, a Mike Trout that you're keeping in round 20 would be better than a Mike Trout that you're keeping in round 1, because it has a higher value over actual value over the value that you're keeping in that round. If that makes any kind of sense. Typically, the teams that do very well are the ones that have players that are high-end talents that are kept at a very late draft pick. That allows them flexibility to draft additional good players in the early rounds of the draft and sort of fill out a very strong team overall. That's usually how success comes out in the draft. So my team, last year, I sold a lot of my good keeper talent in order to try to win the championship, which is usually how my seasons end up going. I frequently mortgage the future in order to try to win now. Hence how I could have had Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Ronald Acuna. Like, all of those players were on my team at one point or another, but I got rid of all of them in order to, early on in their value, in order to try to win championships. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Last year it did not work. I lost in the championship. So when I looked at my draft this year, like literally the day before the draft, because it was really hard to prepare this year for the draft because we don't have baseball, I felt that it was difficult to motivate myself because I was kind of depressed that we didn't have baseball. But anyway, the night before, the
excuses have started already.
I know. I just said, how do you feel about your team, Ian?
Okay, well, I mean, like, I actually think I made the right decision. I like my team. I do. I make a lot of jokes, but I think that I made the right call. My team is very different. My keepers were very top-heavy. Like, I had, I think, five of my keepers were in the first 10 rounds of the draft, which is not typically what you want to do, like, at all. But it was, there were no other options. I didn't have any late round keepers of good value that were worth keeping. So I had to make a decision on the fly during the draft, which I knew I might have to make, about whether I had to go and, you know, go young or continue to try to piece together a team for this year. And I chose the former.
Cool.
Pat, same questions. Going into the draft, what was your strategies, and how do you feel coming out?
I feel like I didn't prepare as much as I usually do, but I talked with you, Richard, I think, about this. Or maybe it was Ian. But anyway, I mentioned this before about how I also feel that because of the modern tools we have, you don't really have to prepare as much as you did in the past, because like it used to be, if you didn't prepare, then you were going to have a dog shit draft. But if you have the right tools in front of you nowadays, you can still have a worse draft than your peers, but you're not going to be terrible. And I mean, you see that it's pretty obvious. I like my team. I made some boneheaded decisions like you always do whenever you're drafting. To like the biggest one that I kind of kick myself about is actually me deciding to draft Manny Machado instead of Anthony Rizzo in the second round. It makes a lot of sense, because if you think that Bellinger is my first baseman, why do I need another first baseman? And I didn't want to kind of corner myself so early in the draft with like my corner infielders and stuff. But at the same time, Anthony Rizzo is a lot better than Manny Machado, and Manny Machado has been struggling in San Diego. And so if I could have done it over, I would have flipped that like in a heartbeat. Hell, I would have chosen Charlie Morton before Manny Machado. It's just my reasoning was flawed. And there was a couple other interesting mistakes I made, but overall I'm happy. I didn't go as crazy as I did last year with like some of the fantasy pros advice. Like, I kind of built my own team, and I didn't allow like prospects and stuff to dominate my thinking. And I'm happy. I think it'll be a good year.
That's good. That just leaves me. I came in with only one pitcher as a keeper, Chris Paddock, and while I'm excited for him, he is a very unknown about a full year and whether or not he'll get all the innings and if he can build upon what he was doing last year. So I knew coming in that I was going to need to draft pitchers almost right off the bat. But I kind of finagled my way into this draft and got basically seven keepers, because I traded to get the first pick, which meant I was able to throw Mike Trout back into the pool to redraft him. That kind of helped a lot with my hitters, but it also doesn't change the fact that I still needed pitchers. So going in almost immediately on the back ways around, all the good pitchers were gone. A lot of them were already kept.
So that's that left an interesting thing. Do you regret what you did? Because if you hadn't have done what you did, you probably would have you would have probably ended up with Charlie Morton.
Yeah, so, well, I don't know if I wanted Charlie Morton wasn't who I was gunning for, because I still don't know, like, I like Charlie Morton, but I don't know if he's, like, ace kind of a, like, all caps. Like, this is my first year without a real anchor to my pitching staff, and there's a lot of questions with everyone, and I think Charlie Morton still would have been another one of those. There's questions about whether or not he's going to continue this because he's getting old, and can he continue the same success as before?
Well, I mean, that's fair, but he's also was the best pitcher not kept that was still on the board, right?
Right. Yep. So, and he went, he went way, I think the 15th pick, and by that point, all that was left was Brandon Woodruff, Yu Darvish, or Corey Kluber. And unfortunately, this was my first year not keeping Corey Kluber because he has gotten old as well. He is now in Texas and he has a atrocious injury history in the last 2 years. So all that meant that I could not trust him anymore. It was time to part ways. That meant that I was stuck with Brandon Woodruff or Yu Darvish, and I grabbed both because I'm just doubling down on dice rolls at this point. And I don't feel super great about it. It's all like, if they do what they were doing last year, then this is going to look great. But if they don't, then I am stuck with a lot of mediocre pitchers that are going, like, I think that their basement is, especially Yu Darvish's basement, we've seen how deep and how bad that is. It's worrisome. I think if I could have done this over again, I think it's a little bit my own fault for not really realizing as I looked at all the keepers, that I probably would have tried a little harder to trade for a real bona fide ace than I did. Going in there with the way I did, I thought for sure I'd be able to find at least one ace pitcher. Not a chance at all. It's been a hot commodity for the last year and a half or 2 years now. Or even 3 years probably.
Pitching is really shallow.
Yeah, and it's gotten worse and worse as we've gone on. So after that, though, I think I kind of was okay. It's still not great. I'm looking at my team, and it's just like, this is fine, but it all kind of hinges on my keepers being better or as good, depending on which ones they are. Like, obviously, Mike Trout is Mike Trout, but, like, dependent on Gavin Lux actually getting a spot to play. It's contingent on Brandon McKay working both the plate and the pitching, or at least the pitching. Luke Voit keeping his job and staying healthy. Yu Darvish being Yu Darvish in all caps and not Yu Darvish in all lowercase with hack lettering in there. It's a lot of just like hopes and dreams set on this thing. So I'm not like super down. Like, this is a much, much, much better draft I think I did than last year, but it's still like, oof, man, there's not a lot of security in this. So overall, though, we'll see. It's a wait and see. Just much like the league, the season for this year is a wait and see. Oh, I will say this. The one thing that drives me up the wall, and I didn't realize this, the only wrench that gets thrown into our whole Yahoo draft. Yahoo has different criteria for position eligibility than ESPN. And I'm surprised that, like, no one's made a stink about it, because certain things in here are listed in one way and certain things in the other. For instance, ESPN has Yasiel Puig as a free agent. Is he not on Cleveland anymore?
No, he's a free agent.
Yeah, so, but Yahoo has him as still on Cleveland, right. And which is kind of alarming until, like you think you're drafting a guy who's on a team, and when you check his news, no news about whether or not he's found another team or is looking, and now that this coronavirus is going on, ooh, man, that really, really hurts about his kind of a value.
Mm-hmm.
And then Yahoo does something with, like, the split, the hitter pitchers, like Shohei Ohtani and with Brandon McKay. ESPN has them as, like, a utility thing. So you can put them in one spot, but you can't play both spots. Yahoo splits them. So there's two Brandon McKays, there's two Shohei Ohtanis. So that's a little bit of an adjustment, especially considering Shohei Ohtani was being kept. It was basically like we had to yell at people not to draft him, which is never a certainty in our league because not everyone listens. So, yeah, weird thing. I hope that when I put everyone into the ESPN's league, I hope that people got the positions that they thought they were drafting for. There was one thing I was looking at a second draft, and I was thinking I was drafting a guy who was going to be a second baseman, and then I looked at ESPN's, and they don't have him as second base eligible. So, yeah, very different and a weird adjustment to make, but one that is being learned.
It's just... I feel that, like, we may have hurt a couple people by doing it via Yahoo, just because the information that they were seeing on their screen, especially if they were not prepared, is not going to super help them. But
Well, I just said about Brandon McKay. Right. ESPN just gave up on his batter thing. There is no Brandon McKay pitch hitting a DH in ESPN right now. It's just pitcher. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was, like, glitching or something. Nope. They just took it off.
Thanks.
I guess he needs it, like, an eligibility or something, maybe. Who knows?
Well, so, like, I mean, I guess he had, like, 5 home runs last year in the minors. Like, but he's going to be mainly a starter, like, or...
Yeah,
like
he's not as... He's not as much of, like, what Shohei Ohtani is, right. Like, a true one. And the Rays, being the Rays, like to basically find your strength and, like, hammer that home. And they kind of, like, any weaknesses... And this is the one weakness, I think, of the Tampa Bay Rays organization. Any weaknesses, they don't even attempt to, like, fix them. They just say, don't try that. You're bad at that. Let's focus on your strengths.
Right.
So, like, which is a bummer for fantasy because, like... You get excited about a Brandon McKay kind of a pitcher, and then Tampa Bay just basically ruins that excitement by saying, forget about that hitting thing, you suck at it. Just focus the pitching, kiddo.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with it, with what you said. But yeah, so the only person that that I think didn't really do all that great was Libby, and she still did okay.
Oh, yeah.
The new guy did fine. It's just he made, like...
I was very... I'm interrupting.
Yeah, no, like, the new guy was fine. Like, he definitely made a few of those, like, expected mistakes, but, I mean, there's nothing too bad to write home about. I think he'll do fine.
Yeah, I was actually very impressed by John's team having... it doesn't look like the other new guys who draft like their players like Mark Teixeira in the first round 4 years well past the point where he should even be drafted.
Right.
Most of these teams are serviceable. The quality of player is up to the point where even the worst team in the league fields a team that at least makes some modicum of sense, I guess. I think.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
With the exception of maybe Libby's best of 2016 team, but
yep.
Yeah. So what do you guys think, speaking of which, what do you guys think about her picking George Springer first?
I was very proud of her for not going with like an immediate. So for those who don't know, Libby is a super uber Cubs fan. And her strategy last year, and in most years, is to try to draft as many of her quote-unquote boyfriends as possible. And that is not limited to just Cubs. That is current Cubs, past Cubs,
and
maybe a future Cub, if she knows of them, maybe future Cubs. Any Cubs that she can get on her team, they're on her team. So this year, knowing that how badly her team did last year, because when the Cubs were bad, her team was bad, I was very impressed that she did not go with a Cub. Her first pick. It was George Springer.
She did not draft her first Cub until the 6th round.
Which is extremely impressive.
Yep. But still, like, she chose George Springer over Marte, Altuve, Stan, which was
I think, I mean,
anyway.
It was still, let's Rizzo, be honest, Morton. It was still wrong. It was still incorrect. Right.
Right.
Like Jose Altuve lasting until James. Like when I looked up and I was like, oh my God, am I going to maybe get Altuve? And then like, I'm like, there's no reason that Jose Altuve, you can make an argument that he should have been the second player drafted behind right. Freddie Freeman. So.
Yeah, so that's the other thing with how keeper leagues work, especially in ours, because of the fact that it doesn't front load them, it you know spreads them out because of our rounds are kept out. When we start drafting in the quote first round, it really actually feels like a sixth round that has a couple second round players like that fell down into it because of the fact that their value just went way too high for anyone to keep. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, you'll get, like, a Jose Altuve, and at that point, yeah, there was no reason. I couldn't believe that he lasted all the way down there.
I don't know if it's anti-Astros bias or something like that, but Altuve was clearly the best player on the board at that point.
Well, Altuve got shit on last year, too, if you remember. He went in the second round last year, right?
Yeah.
Did
he go in the second round? I have the big board up. Yeah, he went to Thomas, first pick of the second round.
Oh, wait, but wasn't that because of an injury concern? I think that was because of an injury concern.
Maybe.
It was because Patrick brought up a very good like attention to Altuve's performance and how the moment Altuve touched Patrick's team, he stopped trying to hit home runs and steals as often as he had before. Especially the steals. Like the steals almost went completely non-existent. And like, at least in terms of Altuve's definition of steals. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden people were like, "Whoa, that maybe that should be, let's temper our expectations on him." And maybe they went a little too far on those tempering, but like, yeah, it started to, I think, have an immediate reaction on the entire league of like,
mm-hmm.
Altuve not being as like sparkly glowy as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. But like, I also agree with what's been said. Like I was actually thinking as well, like, holy shit, am I going to get Altuve the first pick of the second round? I mean, obviously Ian said that he was going to pick him, but...
There was no way he was... Yeah. Like, if he... I was looking, I was like, man, if James doesn't pick him, I'm taking him 100%. But, of course, he didn't.
It's kind of an interesting argument, though, because, like, I understand that in a 12-team redraft league, you're not going to pick Anthony Rizzo... if you can help it in the first round, okay? But I really feel like I like Anthony Rizzo more than Jose Altuve.
Rizzo, for me...
I think it's a needs.
For me, right? Rizzo's power has declined to the point where... Because I traditionally like a first-round player that either has a good amount of pop, like a lot of pop, or one that's like a five-tool kind of guy. So, mm-hmm. like, steals, homer, combo. I don't tip, but I mean, of course, everything's skewed, right, with this format. Right. But personally, Rizzo, to me, the last couple of years, his power has gone down. And he and Bryant both have kind of underperformed draft expectations the last couple of years. So,
right.
He's just, I don't have anything against him, but he's kind of fallen off of my darling list.
Okay. I mean, and I think that's
cool. I think that at this point, and it's really weird to say this because, like, you know, we've seen Anthony Rizzo for so many years, but he's not that much different from Altuve anymore in terms of home run production and power and average. Like, they're all within the same sort of, like, within the same numbers. If anything, Altuve has started to kind of grab a little bit more power than Rizzo, and that's really weird to say that out loud, but, like, yeah, what's going on with Rizzo? Actually, the Cubs in general, though. It's kind of a Cubs thing.
The Cubs haven't been great.
No. Richard, can I make a comment about the draft in general?
No.
I think switching over to Yahoo, we kind of lost some of the trash talk because a lot of people didn't tune in to the voice chat.
True. I thought we had a great amount of trash talk all over the place, but I would say that in terms of, you know, when you're waiting on a pick and it's taking like 10 minutes for someone to pick somebody because, you know, you've got papers upon papers on your desk and you're trying to sort through it all, so trash talk is the only way you can entertain yourself. Yeah, we lost a bit of that, but
I also am a bit of a traditionalist where I enjoyed the old-fashioned nature of having to call out your pick, like, you know, vocally. I kind of like that, because then like you have to say it and listen to everyone else like talk about what an idiot you are. And with this, you know, it just pops up on the screen. There's less ceremony to it.
Yeah, I think the bigger issue is that we only had about half the league join the voice, and even those who did join, like Thomas, no, like obviously no fault of his own, but like couldn't be on voice because he had his son on his lap the entire time.
Yeah, we're getting older, so, is the other thing. I mean,
yeah, and so and this is where I'm going to differ with you, Ian. I don't miss it too much. Like I enjoyed the small bits that we had, and that was like I'm good. Like I don't need to be like too much more than that, because that with having all that trash talk also meant that we were going like 3+ hours on a draft, which like I know last year I think we actually went really really fast. Mm-hmm. And then but like all the years before that our drafts were like, you know,
4 hours,
stretching
yeah.
4 hours or longer, and
Susan was shocked how fast we got done. She was like, you guys are already done. I was like, yep,
it's a time commitment that I think like another reason why I wanted to do on the Yahoo thing was to show just how fast we can get it done, so the time commitment isn't such a barrier, so people aren't sitting here like hemming and hawing about what day they can do a draft and then like saying, oh, like I basically got to cancel my whole plans out because the draft's going to take 4 to 5 hours, and instead it's like 2.5 hours, and then that way like, okay, fine, we can finally get the draft done. Not that like it's not that I want to blow through the draft. I do just want to make sure that everyone can be at the draft. And everyone is at least at the draft. No one auto-picked.
Right.
Which is hilarious.
I don't think we got a single auto-pick.
Yeah. Because that was another reason why I did the Yahoo. Because if someone couldn't show up to the draft, the idea was, you know, it would just auto-pick. And no one would have to do work for that. But yeah, coronavirus canceled everyone's plans. So everyone was naturally able to show up for the draft. And so there was no problem at all. So,
it's pretty nice.
Yeah. But, do you guys want to start talking about the fun stuff and like who's the worst picks and who's the best picks?
Sure.
All right. Let's do the really fun ones first. What was the biggest reaches you saw here? I know in our Reddit that we started...
Jeff Samardzija was drafted.
I cannot believe that she won't quit him.
Jeff Samardzija was drafted. Still... Hey, who wants to guess what his average draft position is according to Fantasy Pros?
520.
All right, well, you can't. You overpicked. You just ruined it. 375.
Okay. That's still.
That's
okay.
Undrafted in most leagues.
Yes. Yes. Whereas in our league, he was drafted in. Where is Libby's team? There it is. He was drafted. Oh my god, why is he high?
Hasn't he been high like his entire career?
He was drafted in the 20th round of a 26-round draft. 235.
Nice. Gave up on Daniel Murphy for him.
Yeah, that wasn't. I don't even. That was not a very good one.
I'm surprised that he's still playing. I would have thought that he had retired or is about to retire.
Well, so I don't know what Libby was using in order to do her draft, like, and so I don't want to. I don't want to.
She probably has posters on her wall at home.
Well, players. I don't want to shit on her too hard because it reminds me of stuff that like we used to do, right? Yeah, like, sure. It's what she did is the classic. Okay, I've gotten all the players that I want. Now I'm going to start drafting just players that I recognize, because players that I recognize at least are like major league players, you know, not these randos who I have no idea who they are. And if you're not using any tools, you're just like doing it on paper or, you know, going off of like a ranking sheet or something like that, then you're literally manually looking down a list. You're like, okay, I don't know who any of these fucking people are. Like, it doesn't even matter anymore. And then you pick Jeff Samardzija. Well, really winds back to Ian's point about how it doesn't seem like she's watched a game in 3 years, because she definitely missed on a lot of people that she should recognize in order to get Jeff. So.
Well, she also puts blinders on herself for these things. Like, she'll see that, like, these like, really fan favorites of hers that she just kind of is like, I'm getting them no matter what.
Right.
That being said, though, to cut her a bit of break, by round 20, you're kind of just sort of, like, throwing darts into the wall to hope.
Yeah, but there's a difference between throwing a dart at something that could potentially win you a league one day than just like drafting somebody who is bad, who is going to continue to be bad just because it's a name that was good at some point in the past. Like, I am of the mind that the last 10 rounds of the draft are where you're in a keeper league. That's where you're going to win 2021 or 2022.
Yeah, nah, I agree. I'm just saying that like when players don't perform in the 20th round, you like it's not as bad of a stab into you as opposed to a player who
doesn't perform. No, but you're intentionally putting a low ceiling on your performance by just like you might as well not have picked. Like, what was the point to that pick? There is 0% chance Jeff Samardzija is going to be anything other than bad.
Yeah, his skills have long been declining, and they're not going to come back anytime soon.
Ian made a really nice segue here. Okay, so Ian's team's going to be fine.
Here's where Patrick's going to tear me a new one.
Yes, the roast of Ian.
Ian's team's going to be fine because it's Ian. Like, I have faith in his managerial ability, but that doesn't mean that he had a good plan going in and that he executed it in any way that makes any sense. Okay, because like I get
he had a very good plan until about round four.
What? I get the whole
plan.
I get the whole Astros like concept where I'm just doing scorched earth, but this isn't Major League Baseball; it's fantasy baseball. And we have real life examples of how this doesn't work out. Okay. So, like, let's just assume that, like, some of these guys that you drafted that aren't scheduled to be up until 2021, let's just assume that all of them turn into Mike Trout. Okay. Like, just for the sake of argument. Right. So, that's great. That means that you're going to start getting Mike Trout's end over end. Starting maybe at best in the middle of next year.
So I'm going to cut you off right there because there's only one player that I drafted this year that is not expected to see a major league ball field this year, and that's Wander Franco. Every other player that I drafted either has already been up in the big leagues or is projected to start the big leagues with their club or is expected to come up after they hit their service time eligibility.
So that, like, guy who is in single A on the Phillies is going to make the major league.
Well, there is nobody that's in single A on the Phillies that I drafted. Spencer Howard and Alec Baum are both supposed to make the ball club at some point this season. Spencer Howard was projected to be the number five starter before all this coronavirus happened. So you're wrong, first of all. But continue.
So the reason why all of this doesn't make any sense is because even if we assume the best, there's no way that you're going to keep all of these players going into next year.
That's what was about.
Well, that's not the point. That's not the point. You just talked about how prospects are hit or miss and not all of these guys are going to hit. So what logically makes the most sense is to broaden your portfolio, throw a bunch of darts and say, okay, like, yeah, I'm not saying that I think Spencer Howard and Alec Baum and what's his name, Robert and Keyboom, like, they're not all going to hit, obviously. But if one hits or two hits, then I have excellent value player to keep going forward. And so, like I told you when we started this, five of my keepers were kept in the first 10 rounds, and all of them except for Bieber are inflating. So next year, Verlander, I can't realistically keep. Devers is going to be kept in, I think, maybe the third. He's going to keep in the third or fourth, which is bad value, probably. Torres is going to inflate. Nola is going to inflate. You know, both of them could potentially be non-keeper values at all. So the only one that I have that for sure will continue to be a value is Jose Ramirez. That's it.
So now hopefully we're done with just interrupting me constantly. Like, so can I actually make the point that I wanted to make?
Well, go ahead, make your point.
You last were talking about Patrick that he can't keep all of them.
So the problem with fantasy baseball is that at least in our league is that you can only keep six players. Okay, so we're going
unless you guys change the rule during the middle of the year, which is now the new rule. You got to get that rule.
Eventually, I'm going to get this point across. Like, it might happen sometime, like next podcast. Like, I'm not really sure when. So you can only keep six players in our league, right? And so what that means is that, like, the talent pool that you end up keeping is just is so incredibly precise that the only way that doing an Astros method actually works is if you have a bunch of suckers who are going to give you all of their talent for these people who are hopefully going to be good or end up being really good. Like, kind of like what I did last year, where you package up a shit ton of people and then you have godly keepers in order to make that work. But that's not the Astros method. Like, I didn't intentionally draft all these darts to try and figure it out. I packaged up a shit ton of talent that people actually use, and I got individual high performance pieces. Like,
did you just low key call all these, all of our league mates suckers?
Yeah, like, because that's the only way that Ian's method here is going to work. Because even if, like, one of his players are good, he just listed five keepers he can't keep. So congratulations, you now have the next Mike Trout in Kaboom, let's say, and then you have nothing else. Like, you because you draft your entire team next year again, it's just like you have to assume that either A, all of these guys are going to hit, or
okay,
B,
so
you can trade them for nothing.
So,
and that's
rather than continue to, like, broad sweeping anecdotal accusations, let's actually approach this scientifically.
Sure.
I'll let you both say. So in my draft, you can all look at the board. What's the first pick that you see that makes no sense?
Giancarlo Stanton.
James Paxton.
Okay.
Tommy Pham.
Why Tommy Pham?
Because there is, like, a bunch of better outfield options, outfield options.
Oh,
still
feel
on the
free
board
to name them.
I am checking as we go along.
My favorite thing is when people say there were plenty of things that you could have done, and they don't know what you could have.
Standby. I had it listed by teams, and that's making this more take longer than I should. Like, there's still pitchers on the board I would have taken. There's still...
Oh, well, see, but there it is again, is I already had four pitchers better than your entire staff at that point.
Oh, that's right.
So
this is why there was
no pitchers.
See,
this is the thing that
board
I don't like, is, like, you guys are all very quick to, like, bash my draft and everything, but none of you have any idea what my team was composed of when these decisions were being made. So, like, my draft was top. My keepers were top heavy, which limited my options early in the draft. And in this kind of draft, you need to have options early on. And I just didn't. So it was very quick that I was like, all right, well, I don't have another pick for an hour because I have all these keepers. So I had to make.
I'm sorry. Keep going.
Oh, go ahead.
So, like, really, what I said is
Turner,
you started
Framil Reyes,
you,
Miguel
you started,
Sano, I would have taken
started
any of these
poorly
guys.
Like with Giancarlo Stanton, and I understand and respect the idea. Like, I don't want to argue about it because I actually agree with you in a way that, oh yeah, because the season's not going to start till Memorial Day, he's going to be fine, he's going to be healthy, da, da, da. But I would have totally picked Anthony Rizzo and Charlie Morton, and I would have thought about Machado.
I got Charlie Morton.
Right, but I would have picked all those guys before Giancarlo Stanton.
I already had three ace-level pitchers. There was no reason to take Morton in the first round. I was just
okay,
like,
but
I
just listed four people, like, for you, and you just said that you wouldn't
you
do
said
one.
Rizzo, you said you'd take Rizzo, Morton, who else?
I would take all four of the next four picks before I would take Giancarlo Stanton.
So Machado and Goldschmidt?
I would take Machado, Rizzo, Morton, and Goldschmidt. And I understand your argument against Morton, but yes.
Goldschmidt and Machado both drastically underperformed their draft value last year, and I would know because I had them on my team. So why would I pick two players that have shown that they may be on the downturn?
I mean, Giancarlo is always hurt. He's hurt right now.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. But if I would rather roll the dice on him hopefully being healthy when the season finally starts, then, like, Machado has never, his career numbers have shown a drastic home road split when he played for Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And that kind of bared out when he went to San Diego, is that maybe he just can't hit outside Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And then Goldschmidt cratered so hard last year.
That's a new ball club. You know,
I mean, I'm not
noticeably older.
I'm not disagreeing with, like, any of your reasoning. Like, what I'm saying is that is that there are legitimate arguments to not.
But my question was not, do we want to split hairs over that? My question, you guys make it sound like I threw the draft. So I'm asking.
Well, right. And like, and we're, and I know Richard didn't have an answer, but I actually have an answer to all these picks. Like, so
Stanton is not, no, throwing the draft means that like, it's indefensible. Like, that's what that means. Like, if you say that I have a legitimate argument, then it's not throwing the draft.
So from Giancarlo Stanton, you have like
wait, Patrick.
Good.
Can I give my answer because now you guys have gotten to so first off, I'm a little softer. I don't know why people hate your Giancarlo Stanton as hard as they are because like, while that wouldn't be mine because of the preference of like, I just don't like to take injury preference guys in the first round. I don't think he's better than, or I don't think he's worse than like Machado or Goldschmidt or some of those guys. There's only like a couple guys that I would have think that I would have probably wanted to have him beforehand. But only barely, and that's again just a difference in philosophy. Like Gallo instead of Stanton, only because they're relatively similar players, but one has less injury history. But like, my issue is one. You definitely, while even sounding jokingly or something, you definitely said that you're basically punting the draft or punting the year. And two, like the idea is to claim that this is the Astros method is rather extreme because we don't have the same sort of mechanics that the Astros can benefit from. You only get your six keepers. That's it. There's no way to bump your round up. There's no way to get like more rounds to pick more players.
Sure, there is.
And
we can trade for draft picks in this league.
True, but like as of right now, that is not part of the draft. Like the idea is that you can't say I'm racing to the bottom like the Astros did in order to.
I mean, that was mostly said in jest. So. Right, Richard. But like, I have an answer for you.
Like, here comes the war machine.
Because here's the other thing. Like picking like I know this is the last round. The fuck is Chris Sale going to do for you next year? Historically, saying every player coming back from Tommy John is utter shit. Like,
he's not going to keep him next year. Like,
first of all, that's not even remotely true.
Jose Fernandez was an exception to the rule. Everyone
Steven
else.
Steven Strasburg takes, like, also was good when he came back from Tommy John.
No, he was not.
Not
the first couple of months.
There are plenty of
back,
players takes, who've had success after they came back from Tommy John.
There is not
we're
plenty.
Losing, we're losing
there
the
are,
point.
There are exceptions.
So, all right. Like, you want to. All right. First of all, like half the shit I said during the draft was just to troll you fucks. So like
I hope so. But then you started telegramming the same stuff to
okay,
us.
So here's
like,
you want
okay.
The,
well, you guys just hate
it
me
is it is
the
ultimate
Astro
troll
method.
Though. Like
well,
I'll,
here's
I'll
the, and here's the truth because this is what Patrick wants to hear, and I know it's what he's thinking. I know it's what he's thinking, but he just won't like lay it out plain. So I'm gonna lay it out plain, and to anybody who's listening to this, like. In our league,
it's gonna be just our league.
Well, that's the point. Is like anybody listening to this, I dare you to prove me wrong. Is I fully intend to make the playoffs this season, 100%.
Bring it.
Right. No, I do. And like, I want both of you to say, like, do you really think I'm gonna miss it? Do you really think I'm not gonna make the playoffs?
I think this is my opinion. I think that. If you continue with your draft attitude throughout the year, then you will wholeheartedly miss the playoffs. However, if you have normal year, then you'll be fine.
Yes, because as a manager, I think Ian is able to maneuver things much better than a lot of other players in here or other team owners in this. The problem is that, yes, if you continue the idea of, oh, well, I'm preparing for next year to go big, then you're going to do exactly what we just said. You're going to trade Verlander for a draft pick. You're going to trade.
I mean, if it turns into a situation where it's like Patrick from last year, where I like look at the lay of the land and I'm like, I can't make it to the playoffs, or I can't succeed, or like, you know, my team isn't good enough to beat whoever. Then like, yeah, that's an option to take. But like, I truly believe that this season, you know, this with the base that I have. That I can grow this team into a contender. And this is literally covering all my bases. Like, this was the safest move to make because the six keepers that I kept were all really good players. And so the team can only be.
No argument.
The team
there.
Can only be so bad. Like, this is not going to be a last place team. You know, I've got this, like, probably the second or third best pitching staff in the league. Like, so the floor is pretty high, one way or the other. So, really. The worst case scenario is I'm somewhere middle of the pack and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm probably not a serious contender and hopefully one or two of my prospects look really good, then yeah, I can deal the obvious ones that are not going to be kept like next year, like Verlander, for more keeper eligible players. And that sets me up in a really good position for next season. And then the other side is just as good, is if my team ends up being strong and I make the playoffs or make a run, then I had a competitive team and it doesn't matter. And then next year I still have probably good, better keeper options than I did this year. So really it's a win-win.
Like, and I mean, we're circling back to the beginning. Like, so the strategy here is that you're betting that the team or all the teams in the league are going to be suckers like they were for me last year.
Yes, I am okay.
Welcome to the league, John.
If I did this in a league full of Thomases, Patricks, Richards, then I would be essentially punting to an extent. But
so you know how many times, Ian, I said last year, congratulations on your championship in the middle of the year.
No, I honestly don't remember.
Four times to four different teams.
Oh.
Like when I made my trade, like, oh man, you fleeced me, bro. Congratulations on your championship. You're going to win this one hands down. Yeah.
Yeah, it did seem like it was weird because Patrick started like full selling things and then it circled like in a weird direction back around to him like buying things in addition to selling. It was a really weird. Patrick had the weirdest drafting or trading at the end of last season.
I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not sure why you guys like have such a problem with what I did.
Well, okay, so like I feel like you're arguing
and so many people are so ticked off.
It just looks so, I wouldn't say ticked off. I just want to say that it just looks like the weakest team I've seen from you in a very long time.
No, the problem is that he is arguing in bad faith, and it's like really an amazing, not attempt, like successful display of trolling, Ian. Like I want to stand up and clap because of how well you've pulled this off. So like literally your entire draft yesterday were things that you do not believe. Like everything that you were saying, and you're like, oh, I'm just punting guys. Oh dude, this is random Phillies prospect. Oh, let's just draft him. Oh, you guys are going to be going crazy because I'm just drafting this rando dude, you know? Like, oh, 2021, I'm going to be awesome. And it really kind of riled us up, right? And we spent a full day really talking, decompressing, or 2 days, actually, and building arguments as to why, like, you're so full of shit and this isn't going to work and you had a terrible draft and everything. And literally right when we opened the floodgates for that, you're like, psych, bitches, the war machine was just joking. You know, like, so all everything you say is invalid. Like, that's literally what just happened to us right now.
I just want to say off topic that our vernacular has been permanently altered because of a D&D campaign to include the term war machine as, like, the description for this ambiguous power.
Have you heard of the coming of the war machine?
No, tell me more. Don't get him started.
So, Ian, did I just hit the nail on the head? Like, come on.
Essentially.
Yeah, okay. Fuck you. But, okay, the rolling back around there, if we're actually talking about, like, good and bad draft picks, honestly, like, we can argue about whether Giancarlo Stanton is going to be the 42nd best outfielder this year or not, but because he was last year. But the only one that I wanted to kind of pick your brain about, Ian, legitimately, that I'm curious, is Robert. Now, it's not because I wanted him, because I did want him, but especially at that specific stage in the draft, like how your team was already kind of coming together, and because you weren't going to pick again for like a million years. Like, why wouldn't you pick a guy like McNeil at that point, who I picked? Or hell, like, even really most of the players within the next round or two afterwards.
So I definitely, and I will give you credit, I definitely overpaid on Robert, but only because I knew he would not be there in the seventh, which was my next pick. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I had to make the decision. I was like, well, he's not going to be there in round seven. Like, 100% he won't. So I'm like, and that was essentially the Robert pick was where I had to make the decision about if I was going to really commit to this strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that I wanted to nab a lot of the like high profile rookies So I was like, all right, like it's now or never, because if I, you know, McNeil was the smarter pick, I think, for sure. There were, and like a handful of the players that came after would have been safer picks to fill out the roster. Particularly, I think Conforto would have been a really good pick. But I was at that point, I looked at the team and I also looked at the fact that I was only going to have like one other pick in the next like five rounds. And I was like, you know, I don't think that I want to continue with a conventional strategy here. And I was like, let's just go for it. So this pick only, Robert is one of the only ones where I'm like, we'll see how well this pays off. Like the other ones are so late in the draft that it gives me years to have them develop into something really, really good. But if Robert doesn't hit really quick, then it doesn't work. Because if he essentially has to have like an Acuna type season this year in order to justify that pick. So, you know, I mean, that one's probably the least likely to pan out, but it's, you know, if it does hit, then great. And he also becomes a really valuable trade chip if he's that good, because his value isn't super great, but other people will think that it is. So,
right. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, like, it was just a really weird kind of segment because, like, I really like the Urias pick, or how you pronounce his name, in round 11. And, I mean, after I did Marquez, Mercado, and Puig, I kind of wish that I picked Urias instead. But, like, but it's just, like, it's just so uninspiring. Like, if you just read those four picks in a row, because in the span of you getting Tommy Pham, Robert, Kevin Biggio, and Urias, you know, the rest of us got all of these people. Now, I understand you got those keepers in there. It's just, I think that also kind of jokingly turned the tide against you as far as, like, public opinion during the draft, because it's just like, all right, see you guys later. And I mean, you, like, went to take a shit.
I mean, it is kind of like a level of, and I won't lie, there is a degree of arrogance coming across. I mean,
no.
Well, I mean, like, who? Like, I'm essentially daring the league to prove that I'm an idiot. So
freeze him out, starve him.
That's the thing. Like, I'm essentially saying, like, all right, like, this is how good I think I am. Is that I can draft all of these young players, hope that a couple of them hit, and that I'm counting on the fact that I can outsnipe you guys throughout the season and build a better team, and that it doesn't matter that I, quote, threw the draft. So, right. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of challenging the rest of the league besides you guys and Thomas and, to an extent, Mark and Andrew, to...
James.
Like,
James is the one who's been sniping the best.
Yes, but James is more quantity over quality. So,
that's true. The reason like James has trouble sometimes, I think, is because he tries to grab every hot, quote, hot prospect at once, and they're not all, one, they don't all fit on your team, two, they aren't all going to be hot players, and you kind of have to, like, basically everyone who's trying to sell an article is going to make it sound like the next coming of Mike Trout, and the problem is that you kind of have to read between their lines and, like, really gauge, like, oh, this guy's just like a big hot defender, he's not going to be doing much on the hitting side.
If you guys prove me wrong or prove yourselves right, then all that means is we finally have a really good league and I should be happy. So can you stop talking about me for a second, please? So Kenley Jansen in round three.
So Kenley Jansen going before Josh Hader and Kirby Yates is atrocious.
I feel like that's unforgivable to me. But I also want to say
who grabbed.
Well, hang on, but this is the rub, right? Because it's John, and I don't think that he recognized the fact that we value holds in this league.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So because like Hader and Yates is a closer now, but Hader gets hold. Like his big weakness in conventional fantasy is that he doesn't save a lot of games, but he gets tons of holds in our league, so he's light years ahead of every other reliever. So I think that was probably John just not looking over the categories well enough before he drafted.
That's probably true. And if you're not doing that, then all of a sudden you're looking at their closers and you're thinking like, this is clearly going to be the better closer when...
Well, and it especially hurts him because, can we talk about how John is this year's Patrick and me, where he, like, now he's the reliever heavy guy? Because he has like seven relievers and he only has like two or three starters. And I think the fact that he didn't draft Hader, the fact that he didn't draft Hader.
And he's got shitty relievers too.
Well, I mean, they're not great. That's... I mean, some of them are okay. Jansen and Chapman are fine. Workman is fine.
Yeah, that's the problem. So, like, the thing with the high relief strategy is because you're playing the ratios, and which is a very volatile stat, so you need to make sure stats, so with ERA, WHIP, and K to
Walk. You gotta get the best ones.
The best ones, and you have to make sure also that the few starters you do have don't fuck it up for you. Mm-hmm. So
I don't mind him having Scherzer. Like, I think, you know, that's... It's not a terrible route to take with one ace.
Yeah, he's got Scherzer and Clevinger, so he could be...
But you needed to get Hader, and Yates, I would say, is, like, right there, too. But he really needed Hader.
But then he has, like, Ian Kennedy, who's going to screw his ratios up dramatically.
Oh, don't worry, he's got Hector... Oh, wait, no, that's James that has Hector Neris, my bad.
James is on a different... he's got
Hector Neris in round 8. Yeah, that's what I like.
So I also want to bring up, I don't want to completely derail us, but I want to bring up how the nature of our league really hurts value of drafted players just in general. Because of how we get six keepers or 12 teams, okay, so it means that, like, what, 72 players are off the board just right off the bat. And that means that you're drafting people like, you know, like after the big ones are gone, like Gallo, Berrios, Robles, Woodruff, you know, fucking Yu Darvish in the third round, you know, stuff like that. There's no possible way there after you get the fish that are thrown back that any of these guys are going to be kept because their values are so inflated.
Yeah, like Corey Kluber in the fourth round. No one, it's unlikely anyone's going to keep that guy. But
right,
because of how our draft's set up, like I said in the beginning, with the six keepers, your round one has like basically round six players in it, with a couple sprinkles of maybe a second round.
That's why it's even more important to hit on those, like the rookies or the up and coming or the sleepers, because they're the ones at the end or in free agency that are going to really bolster your keepers for the following season.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think it really redefines what the term reach means, because like, yeah, they're still reaching because if the player is going to be available to you four rounds after when you draft them, okay. But like, it's not really the same as traditional reaching, because you fill out your team more in whatever way it needs to be done. And I feel like that's where the most rookie mistakes happen, where like, it's how you get... You get like John's team, you know, not including his keepers. His first four picks were Paul Goldschmidt, Kenley Jansen, Aroldis Chapman, and Yasmani Grandal. Right, like that's a guy who's really used to redraft leagues, who's looking at talent available, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, there's like nothing here. I need to grab like the biggest name I can, you know, like whatever's left. And you get a really shallow team because of it.
Yeah.
Do we think...
I mean...
Go ahead.
He writes himself out later. He gets... after Grandal, he does get Justin Turner, who... Like, say what you will about Justin Turner, he's still a pretty solid third baseman. Mm-hmm. And in the seventh round, especially in Arlie, grabbing him by that point was pretty darn good. And he kind of starts to... I think he starts to kind of figure out what the league is. A little late, but, like, he does start to kind of... buck up and... grab a bunch of guys that I don't see as bad picks. It's just, you know, it took them a little bit to get there.
What do we think what do we think of Adalberto Mondesi in round 3?
I thought that was
it's kind of a mix for me, because steals are really scarce in today's game, but he is just like,
he's pretty bad.
He's like Billy Hamilton all over again.
Well, he's a little better than Billy Hamilton, and to be fair, he is also a little slower. Like, I mean, he's like, I feel like I'm the authority on Mondesi, because I thought he was going to be the next Mike Trout because of that like couple months he had 2 years ago, and I was just like, oh my gosh, it's going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, and then he sucked so much dick last year, like. Yeah, he stole like 60 bases or something, but in fantasy baseball, that's not going to win you jack. Like, it's just, it's not worth it. And I know where people rank him because he was like ranked in the second round or something last year. And
well,
I get
our leagues
it.
Typically overvalue steals, as
right?
A rule.
Yeah,
I get it. It's just I don't think it's gonna.
So his line from last year was he had 58 runs, 62 RBIs, 9 homers, and he stole 43 bases with a 264 average.
Hamilton wishes he could get he could hit above 200.
Yeah, it's like a watered down Hamilton, I guess.
But like that's the thing though, if you know that he's going to be Hamilton-esque, even a better Hamilton, then you'll know that like that's the biggest hurt is not the fact that he does this, but the fact that you drafted him in the second round. That's where like the real pain comes from, because that's not a second round player. That's a, you know, maybe eighth round player.
It's hard. I think in our league, it particularly matters what the rest of your team looks like, because you're going to take you're essentially baking in a loss of 20 to 30 runs and home runs and RBIs off the top of like a league average player that would be in that same spot. Mm-hmm. So you're hoping that the rest of your team has a strong enough power base to make up for it. And just looking at Mike's the rest of his team. Oop, hang on. Let me go to the correct spot here. Pete Alonso at first, Ketel Marte, Muncy, Olsen, Andrews, Blackman, Ramon Laureano, J.D. Davis, Shin-Soo Chu, A.J. Pollock, and Will Myers. Yeah, that doesn't give me an abundance of confidence. I mean, Ketel Marte and Pete Alonso are very good, but the outfield is... a bit thin at the end on power.
So
this is where, like, I'm curious about where this player finishes in the Yahoo with like net stolen bases, because I want to see like how many times he got thrown out before he got to those 43 stolen bases. Because if it's not a lot, then suddenly his value skyrockets because of the fact that he's going to be a more successful base dealer, which is another stat that could benefit a runner. But you know, it's, and I hope, actually, even worse now, I hope that that stat did not influence John to get the guy.
The funny thing is, Mike is still only projected, according to Fantasy Pros, to come third in stolen bases beyond Pat and Thomas.
Or John, or Mike, yeah.
Hmm.
Which is interesting.
Stolen, like, I feel that that those kind of rankings for stolen bases don't make any sense anyway, because even with Mondesi on my team last year, and if you remember, my team... From the draft last year, my team was like, okay, for the first time in the history of the planet, I'm going to win stolen bases. Because I geared my draft towards average and stolen bases. It's just kind of how it fell. Well, I mean, I'm going to say I never won stolen bases, but it's such a finicky stat that even if Roto I would win stolen bases, half the fucking weeks I would lose.
Well, and also in our league, since we have 6 hitting stats instead of 5, the value of stolen bases increase just because it's only less than 20% of your total hitting stats, unlike a 5x5. So
right.
I think it's perfectly legitimate to ignore it just as a category.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that's because when you hit, like, in our, the way our, again, another reason why I'm testing out net stolen bases, when you hit a home run, you're not stealing anything. But the home run is dragging in along with it the OPS, the RBIs, the run, the home run category.
Right.
And then if it's a decent enough player, the average. Like, it's doing way more. Going for a power player is doing way more for your stats than a speedster.
Right.
Because you might get a run. You might. But you're probably not going to get a net. You're not probably going to get a RBI. You're definitely not getting a home run. And you could have gotten on base because of walking. So it might not even do anything for your average.
And piggybacking off what Pat was saying is that in head-to-head categories, it's diminished even further. Because like your standard Roto, you can kind of bake in those expected steals over the course of the year. But steals are, they're so reliant on your team, aside from just your individual performance, like home runs. Like you hit a home run, like as long as you're getting decent pitches to hit, you hit a home run when you're playing well. But like if your team is telling you not to steal, or if you have a runner on base ahead of you and you can't steal, or if it's a situation where you just wouldn't steal because of the game situation, then you just don't get steals. And so like there are weeks where you'll get like a bunch and weeks where you won't get any. So I feel like in categories, stolen base, people who are steals heavy are even less valuable than they would be in Roto. It's like standard Roto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
It's a problem. We'll have to. It's something that like I said, I want to see how a different stat added into the mix might help balance out a speedster. Because otherwise, yeah, we're looking at Mondesi and we're like, why the hell is he drafted this high up?
Right.
Pat, wasn't there a league a year, Pat, like a couple years ago, where you punted on saves?
That was last year.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's what
it
I'm doing
very
this year.
Poorly.
It did go poorly.
Oh yeah.
So like see... like the problem with punting saves is that you're not just punting saves. You realize extremely quickly that your relievers are what regulate your ratio stats.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, and so like, I mean, Verlander's going to have a bad start, and then, well, what happens from there? Well, if you don't have any relievers, you need to hope that you have a whole bunch of Verlander replacements that are starting better, you know, at his normal level, because you're not getting any innings whatsoever of, you know, like 1-2-3 strikeout innings from top shelf relievers. So yeah, it's a tough road to hoe, and I completely failed at it last year. That's why this year when I came in, I was like, fuck it, I'm getting what I want. And it, honestly, like when we were getting to the end of round three, and I saw that all the relievers were still on the board, I was really worried that somebody was going to take Hader. And then when John picked Kenley Jansen, I was like, oh my God, it's like prayers have been answered. Because I knew I was going to take at least one reliever on the turn. And then once I saw both Hader and Yates were available, I was like, fuck it, let's just do it.
Yeah, I think you got a serious point there, because that is one of the things I've noticed the last couple of years having Hader on the team, was that it really helped to dull the occasional bad starts from my starters.
Mm-hmm.
Is I was like, because like he was just, his whip and ERA were so good, it was like I could have a subpar start from one of my starting pitchers, and then it would be like, oh, it's not as bad because Hader, you know, had seven innings this week and he didn't even give up a hit. So
mm-hmm.
Well, and also he strikes out enough people that it almost feels like it's another starter with
yeah
you,
it's almost like he strikes out like 140-150 batters a year, so it's like another starting pitcher. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm fully prepared to be wrong on this.
Let's go switching gears. Positives. What were some of the like really good picks that you were surprised that were either still on the board or that somebody was able to grab right from you or something, like, or even that you did yourself, that you were like, man, I cannot believe I was able to get this guy at this round.
You wanna go first?
I can't believe this guy.
I poo-pooed it during the draft, because I don't like to set the precedent of complimenting James. I vocally poo-pooed this pick, but Kyle Tucker in round 7 has the potential to be a really good value, because I think he's got 30-30 talent. And if he can just get around the Dusty Baker, that's the thing. If he can earn everyday playing time, I really think that he has the potential to be a top 20 player next season, and that'll be a really good pick then. He's really inhibited by the old Dust Master. But so we'll see if James actually listens to this, because I was pretty vocal during the draft. I was like, oh, he's not even sure to starting job, blah, blah, blah. In my head, I'm like, ah.
Yep. Well, I mean, so near as Gavin Lux, and yet I still kept him and held on to him.
But well, the Dodgers really believe in him, I think, because they had offers for him for Lindor. And they turned them down. So
they would have traded him to the Red Sox if they didn't think he was worth it.
Yeah, I think that they really believe in him. So I think he's going to get time.
I think I'm just going to go with my pick. Mark's pick of Luke Weaver.
That's
a good one, too.
I really, like, I was actually kind of hoping he was going to fall to me. I didn't think he would, because he was getting dangerously close to everyone else, but... the fact that he kept like getting skipped, and I think that this could be a very, very good year for him. Based on the small, well, it was a small sampling last year, I think like 64 innings. I think that man, that could be one of, like, he has the makings of potentially another, like, strong, maybe not ace, but a number two pitcher, right on top of what he already has with Snell and DeGrom. So, yeah, I was a little like, oh, man, I think I even had him in my queue when all of a sudden I heard that the very, like, nice noise the queue likes to make when you lose a player.
Yeah, Luke Weaver is a good one. I actually have a couple of these. I think that James's team, if his pitching wasn't such dog shit, that he really obviously did some great research in the draft.
Yeah, his hitting is like actually this it's really scary looking, or pretty darn strong.
Eric Hosmer in the 17th.
So I feel like Kevin Newman is a really good pick, and he got a good value at him. He did well on my team last year, and he's one of those guys that I would have kept if I had the opportunity to. But I mean, there's no way I could keep him. So he could really be a breakout star. Obviously, you said already about Kyle Tucker just a couple rounds prior to that. I mean, like, he did go for Wilson Ramos, but I mean, it's...
Yeah, but I at the 18th round for catcher, whatever. And at least he won't hurt his average, which is all you can ask for from a catcher these days.
And the one that, like...
He token Asian player, which he always seems to have.
I was about to say that was my next favorite pick was Shun Yamaguchi.
Oh my gosh.
Like, why is it James always seems to have one Asian player on
the game? And I'm gonna draft a Asian player. Is that all right?
I even want Dansby Swanson. Like, it just worked out so well.
I'm gonna draft a white player. Is that all right?
That was so hysterical.
Oh man.
And
why are you asking his permission? Right.
I think that the other ones that catch my eye are Mancini in the 11th. I like Trey Mancini by Thomas's team.
I have even like started talking about
Mitch Garver. I like him on Mike's in the 24th. Mm-hmm. Probably would have grabbed him at some point if I had not been busy drafting all these other people.
Want to gush, but like. I think Thomas is my favorite player favorite person to play against in fantasy. Like his team is, I mean, Carlos Carrasco is probably the only one that stands out to me as like, oh, well, that could be good or bad. As
he took a chance,
flip a coin. Yeah, but the 7th is well, whatever. But like looking at his team, like I loved his keepers going into this. I loved that the guys he
Caleb Smith in the 17th. Picked. That could be a really good one.
Yeah. Like everything, every person, it feels like Thomas just like, I don't know how much research he does.
Thomas is seems very like dialed in. Like he's,
yeah, he, but never sounds like shit. He is like he just, it just sounds like he walks in and then with a wave of his hand, he just fits them all together. And it's always fun to training with this guy. And so like, man, oh man, like, and then you see this team put together and you're like, crap.
So Thomas has like a little weakness for Braves on. Because he is a diehard Braves,
but luckily
fan.
This is a good year to be to have a weakness for
it
Braves.
Helps that this team is so good. But yeah, Thomas, like I've known him for a long time, and his he has very deep baseball knowledge, so he kind of feels the game better than a lot of people. So it doesn't surprise me that he's just put together a pretty good team.
I mean, say what you will about like I don't know Gene Segura, but like. In the 14th round, I'm fine with that. Joey Lucchesi in the 22nd. It's just guys that... Eric... I don't know if this is good or bad, but I enjoyed seeing Eric Thames get drafted in the 25th. but, yeah, it's just... I just liked watching it. Like, when you look at his team, you're like, yeah, I get what you're doing here. Adam Eaton in the 10th. So hopefully, now that he's actually healthy.
Well, he does a good job balancing sort of bankable numbers with upside guys. So it's a good mix.
Yeah.
So, Ian, I got a question for you, hopefully to help some of the people who are listening to this this podcast. So let's say that you're one of the lesser teams. Ha 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 ha. And... You know, like James and like John.
Jesus.
And like, you know, like Newbie, whatever that guy's name is.
And Ian's team, 2020.
Yeah, and me.
Like, I mean, there's at least three or four teams, I think, that fall into this boat just looking at the keeper list. So, just starting out, those teams are obviously in a much worse place than some of these other teams. Like mine, for example, who is going to win. So what advice can we give to these teams in order to make their teams better so that they can have a better time and be more competitive next year?
Richard, do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first because I have a hopefully mine's a short answer. But mine mine is mostly keep up on the news. You don't have to be like James where you have a notification bling every single time a guy's getting caught up. Mostly because if you're getting that notification, you're already too late. If you're
That's
looking at a guy,
true, yeah.
If you're looking at a guy and you think that this is going to be and you know that he's being touted as this big prospect or that he's this unknown player that is slowly over the last week or two has been starting to like really heat up and everyone's talking about like, dude, he's actually made a big change. Like, look for words like that. Like, he's changed his swing. It's getting more lift than before, or like a pitcher. Like, hey, he's incorporated a new pitch and it's working and it's like this is different, this is more like, don't wait till a notification pops up on your phone to tell you this thing. Grab it then and hold on to it. Like, even if you know like you have to start like switching guys around because of DLs, if you are in the bottom of the pack, even if you're in the bottom middle, just like grab your guy and hold on to him, and then that way next year you've got your guy and you can start building things around him. It takes a little bit of time, but like, yeah, don't wait for these things to let you know. Otherwise, you might be. There's always a chance that you get to pick him that day at 3 a.m. Pro tip: get a job that keeps you up till 3 a.m.
or have a kid.
But yeah. Other than that, no, go just do a couple of researches here and there at least maybe once a month or so. You don't have to do too much, but like, you know, just look around, see what's happening in the baseball world and then grab those guys.
I would say, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again, is actually watch the games. That's my biggest thing. If spoiler alert, if you guys, most people get those RotoWire little player blurbs after games and after starts and stuff like that, or after they put up a big line score. Spoilers, most of those are written by people who aren't actually watching the games. They're either reading off the box score or going off of a press release or something like that. So please, if you're going to take something away from this is fantasy baseball. We all do this because we love baseball. Actually watch the games, because you can tell a lot from what you see. You know, base that a line score won't show you, like a six innings, three runs they're not all equal. Sometimes a guy gets unlucky and he's like throwing heat and doing, you know, getting a lot of swings and misses, and then all of a sudden he just has a bad inning or something. Or sometimes a guy's
he's throwing something and the base runner or the defense lets him down, and you'll watch it and you're like, dude, if that guy was like, if the second baseman was in position, he would have caught that.
Exactly.
Would have been
an
out
and like,
first.
But that's stuff you don't see in line score. Yeah. So yep. You know, you can tell.
Now you could make an argument of like, why are you trying to pitch to contact like that? But that's the different. Besides,
but
the
usually
point.
You can tell if a guy is dealing or a guy is not. It doesn't take a deep knowledge of baseball to be able to look at a pitcher as they're pitching and just say, oh wow, they're pitching really well. So
always be weary of fly ball pitchers. Especially
Richard.
In an age with juice.
Yeah, I think watch.
Sorry.
if you have an ability or a bit of extra money when the season finally starts and you can get MLB TV where you can see all the games, the out of market games, and that way you can like watch a lot more baseball. I think that makes you a lot better as a fantasy player, just because you see the people that are on your team and you can kind of tell if there's someone that you want to keep on your team or not. And also you get to see people who you're thinking of adding. And then, you know, sometimes every once in a while, these commentators have something useful to say too. They know these teams better than anybody. So they're going to be able to talk. They'll have their prospect reports in the seventh inning or whatever. Be like, oh, so-and-so is doing really good. We're looking forward to seeing him up in a couple weeks or whatever. Like, you know, so yeah, I think more than anything else, I think that is what you can do to separate yourself from most other teams.
Yeah. I'm not going to go into the amount of depth there, but I think Ian hit the nail on the head in that it I feel like my fantasy game got way worse when I started watching less games. And it doesn't even have to just, it doesn't have to be all the games. You just watch games with players that you have, teams that you like, you're a fan of, whatever. Because like you said, I mean, the line score doesn't mean shit. Like, you get good players who will have a good season by watching them, like, give up, you know, I don't know, like a fictional example, like watching them walk a guy, the center fielder, then misplaying a ball and two runs scoring, you know, and then him hitting a guy in the shoulder, obviously rattled, and then striking out the side, right? Like, so you can get a really good idea of his stuff regardless of what actually happened during the game, and you can make decisions.
Yep. I agree.
I'd also say one last thing I think Patrick would agree with is limit the number of leagues you play in.
Oh, Jesus. Yes.
Because I used to play in, like, there was a year several years ago where I had five different fantasy teams, and it was the most miserable baseball season of my life. And
baseball writers can get away with it because they're being
it's their
paid
job.
To do
this they do
stuff.
Nothing else. Yeah. Like, so I, after that year, I was so miserable. And I was like, this is the only league I really care about. I was like, this is the league. There's so much pride because it's been
that was year two. I won my championship too.
Yeah. It's like, we've done this since college. Like, I love this league. The other ones, I can take it or leave it. So I left every other league, and this is the only one I play in. And so it makes it so much more, like, easier and also more rewarding than, like, having other leagues. So I would definitely limit it to the ones that you really care about.
I think also, just to build on it, if say, like, not to call anyone out, but, like, James, for instance, I feel like he's kind of stuck at a point where, like, he does watch a lot of baseball. In fact, he watches probably more baseball and is more plugged in than all of us combined, maybe. But I feel like he still hasn't pushed over there, and I'm not saying that, like, I'm trying to be this grandfather character guy, but if you're looking for the next things to do in terms of what else can I try to help myself with, Fangraphs is free, and they have articles on there all the freaking time. The Athletic is not free, but their articles are fantastic. Oh, yeah.
They're doing 90 days free on The Athletic.
Yeah.
So I'm actually
and honestly, it's not that expensive.
Keith Law's
cheaper than I think. Oh, thank God. Yeah, Keith Law has finally quit ESPN. I think their subscription is actually cheaper than the ESPN Insiders. I'll have to double-check that. But if you want, you can follow the Baseball Writers on Twitter because they're always, like, spouting out stuff. And then Baseball Podcasts, just to get the vernacular and to get, like, what to be looking for a lot of times, because they'll just start... You don't have to, like, be a steady watcher or a steady listener or a steady reader, but just getting stuff to, like, start focusing on, because there is this danger of once you start watching, like, MLB TV a lot, they're going to be talking about, like, the real baseball, like stuff that matters to major league teams, and stuff that matters to them is like a pitcher who can pitch a 4.5 ERA. That's dog shit for fantasy. Like, we're focused in on like trying to constantly keep pushing these numbers, because when you boil it down, fantasy is more on the sabermetric side, and you're going to listen to the guys who are really plugged into those areas. Otherwise, you're going to be like making your team much like how a fan makes a team for real Major League Baseball, and it's just not going
to... I can feel you, Patrick's disagreement over the microphone.
You will get a certain direction with that, or a certain length, but I feel like if you really want to, you've got to incorporate both the real baseball viewing
Patrick
and the
numbers.
Patrick
is subsiding with his anger.
because you guys said, you've got your line score, and you're going to see, especially the ratios, those ratios are going to lie to you a lot of the times in that line score. But, like, when you watch the replay, you'll see what caused those line scores, and you're like, okay, well, that actually isn't his fault. Yes, this sucks for me this today because that ratio just screwed me over, but that wasn't his fault at all. But, like, if you're looking for predictive stuff, that's when, like, Fangraphs and articles and stuff and just getting these vernaculars and what stats to be focusing on or the new stats that are coming out and stuff. Or hearing about how launch angles and, like, new pitch incorporations are happening and what that means. Spoiler alert, being the most athletic he's ever been, or most fit he's ever been, means absolutely nothing in this game. you're looking for actual, like, substantial stuff to base your knowledge on.
I think...
So yeah, that's in addition.
I think Richard is more right than he used to be.
Hey, thank you.
And And I'm sure this shocks Ian.
It shocks me.
Because, like, I still am, I'm well on the record thing, but I'm still the guy who feels like you can sit in the bleachers and watch a guy throw 20 pitches and pretty much figure out the type of guy he is. If you're really good. And I think that that's the intangible aspect that a lot of newer owners don't fully understand, is that, like, Richard was dog shit when he first started fantasy.
Yeah. Okay.
And he took the approach of, well, I mean, he took a lot of approaches, but, like, he gained a ton of success, way more success than I've had in fantasy, by doing a mathematical approach, really diving deep into fan graphs and building teams, championship winning teams that, championship winning teams that, you know, were built on this sabermetrics thing. I always felt that was fundamentally flawed at the beginning because the sabermetrics weren't really there. They were there on the field, but they weren't there for fantasy. Like, you didn't have the launch angle revolution yet. Like, we had, like, weird ass stats that don't mean anything, like war, you know? Like, I fully reject the idea that, like, if the Angels traded Mike Trout away, they would only lose 9 less games a year. Where the fuck his war is, you know? That's stupid. Like, it is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. But it's come so far from that, right? Like, I can't just say, hey, all you got to do, brother, is you just got to watch some games and you'll see who's good, you'll see who's not, and the more you watch, the better you'll be. No way, because you'll lose to guys like Richard all the time, like every year, because he watches games and he, like, studies Fangraphs for, like, his entire fucking life. So, like, so
Jesus,
not
this is
only
so nice, I can't believe how nice he's being.
I know. Not only is he, like, seeing the players, like, for how they're actually playing, but then he can be like, well, is the reason why this guy hasn't hit 30 home runs yet because he's just getting unlucky with his isolated power? Let me look that up. And then he makes decisions from there. And you can't argue with that, you know?
Yep. To put a capper on that and my thoughts, is, and I know we're kind of going long, and I
hear what you're saying, Patrick, and yes, I will marry you.
I know that, like, we must occasionally sound kind
my
of
anus is ready.
Elitist on this podcast, and I know I particularly threw it kind of intentionally on this podcast.
Well, a lot of the talk is, I think, mostly us. Like, I don't think at the end of the day we're really going to be. I don't care too much about your team strategy, Ian. I see what you did, and I'm going to focus on my team instead. So it's all in good fun.
I wasn't talking to you.
You're talking in general to the. I just want to make it clear that, like, all the criteria we've done is not like we're going to bed thinking of this right before we go
to
sleep.
No, and I also just want to say, like, I, you know, half, a bunch of this was in jest. Like, I know I must have come off as quite an asshole during this podcast, but I think, like, you know, talk to the other people who have done well. Like, talk to Richard, talk to Patrick. Like, these guys know more about baseball than pretty much everybody. And Thomas and James and Mark, I will give Mark. But, like, you know,
our current champion, hail Mark.
Andrew too. I know I gloss over Andrew a lot, but he also, you know, knows his baseball too. Mostly local baseball, but he knows his baseball. Just, you know, we're all very. We've been doing this for a long time. This is some of the people in this league have been here for 11 years, and we keep doing this because we love it and we, like, enjoy the company and the friendly competition, not because we just want to, like, flay each other every year. I think
that's why,
you know. Talk to the people in your league, shoot the shit with them, figure out what they're looking at, and, like, what they're watching and who they like and stuff. Most people will be pretty upfront with, like, how they approach the game. And that's because we want, I think, and we've pretty much routinely said this, that we want the standard of play in the league to be as high as possible, that we get frustrated when people, like, through ignorance or through laziness or whatever, don't do well. We want people to do well, and I think that standard is as high as it's ever been, and we want it to get higher. So I don't think anybody's going to tell you to pound sand if you ask them, like, hey, like, what do you think of this guy, or hey, like, you know, what do you do to look, you know, to get better at this? Like, most people will talk your ear off, just like we're doing now. So we are nice people, I promise. I'm not an asshole, I promise.
I might make you pound. I might say pound sand if you try to keep telling me every single update that the Rays are doing as if I haven't heard it, and to make it sound like to brag that you just sniped these picks for the umpteenth time for me.
Wow, that sounds like an attack on James.
It maybe. I'm not saying anyone's names. That it's more than it might be more than one person. But yeah, if it sounds like I'm irritated, it's because of that, not because of the general like approach.
He's only irritated because Wander Franco will be on my team until we both die.
Yeah, that's what you think.
He's Byron Buxton 2.0.
No, right.
Oh man, don't please no. The Rays have hurt enough.
Anyway, cool.
Anyway, cool. Guys, you have anything else you want to talk about in terms of the draft or players or anything? Any declarations you want to make?
Do you guys ever have the feeling that you both want everybody in the league to succeed, to be the best they can? And, you know, I want Libby to win a championship, right? Like, and I want Rook to make the playoffs, blah, 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 blah. But you also want everybody to be so bad that you get all the good players?
Yeah. Yeah. That, like, I would love for Libby to win a championship just after I do. And then
I really want, like, if there are two players in this league that I desperately want to win championships, it is Thomas, first of all, because he's really good. Yeah. And then I definitely want Brooke to make the playoffs because she's been so close so many times and she's just missed it. And I really want her to break through that wall and make the playoffs. I think she's just right there.
Well, I agree with that. I also want to add James and Libby because they've both been in the league for so long. And I think James puts in a lot of work and like really, really loves this league. And it would be really cool to see like that all come together for him.
Has
one
James
of these
been
years.
In this league? I think he's been in it since the beginning.
Since the beginning, not including the weird high school version.
Well, I'm talking about this.
But
league.
Most of that core is destroyed at this point.
Yeah, I'm talking about
at this
league.
He's been him and Mark and you and I and Pat have all been in this league, and Andrew have been in there.
Pat with an asterisk,
right?
Yeah, he left for a year or two. I forget.
But 11 seasons, and yeah, James has been close a lot. Like,
yes,
he's been really.
He's always
close.
Been on the cusp, and so it'd be really cool to see him actually like. Everything come together and fire on all cylinders and then him get into the championships and win it.
Well, and like we've had a tradition now the last two seasons of people breaking through that wall, right? Because Mark finally got it and Heller finally got it. So yeah, this if it holds, then this year should be, you know, James's year. But it's
he's due.
But I mean, I think that's what's made this league all of a sudden really take that next step, because for forever it was just me and Richard. Just back and forth, but then like Pat got his and Heller got his.
Yeah, Pat,
James
that was
got
actually
his.
The most surprising was how long it took Pat to actually get his. He had to quit the league and come back in order.
Always a bride. Yeah, so I had to quit the league, steal all your players, and then
it's and like then, it was like Batman Begins. You went and trained in the mountain. Razak.
I just want to say how well that worked out. Like, I did not expect, like, when we did the expansion draft thing, I thought this is going to be absolutely terrible, and we're going to have a lot of, like, salt by the end of this year. But, like, by the end, we were just like, nah, this seems good.
Pretty fair, I would say, generally.
As good as we could make it.
Like, people were bitching as people bitch, but...
Oh, yeah, when it was happening. But the moment it ended and we all got to look at our teams and stuff, we were like, no, this could work.
Yep.
Good luck, everybody.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much for coming on. Good luck to your seasons whenever, if it ever starts.
God.
What? Fingers crossed.
Hey, fingers crossed for that treatment thing they're doing in New York.
Yeah.
Fuck that. The world's overpopulated. Just kill them all.
Thanks, Scrooge McDuff. All right, guys. I guess Ebenezer Scrooge. One
and if you want to send any hate mail, send it to Joey at OTN.
At OTN Media or whatever.
.org. Now, if you guys want any hate mail or criticisms, by all means, send it to League of Mediocre Gentlemen at OTNmedia.org. We also have a Twitter. It's at VLOMG. And we have a link for the Discord in the description below. That's also where you can find our league link at. So all the stuff we were just talking about will make way more sense if you're able to look at it. I will try to actually put this message in the front so that way you can look at it as we go along, so it will make more sense for people.
Ooh, and the subreddit. Do we want that to be a thing? Or is that just
it's
us?
Private. The problem is the subreddit's private, so I think it should just be us.
You can all get fucked.
Yeah, sorry. If we want... if we're going to make a subreddit for this show, then we should probably make a separate one so that way more people would be able to talk about more.
It would just
baseball.
Be us three.
Yeah. It would be our Telegram chat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I'll try to make sure that I put the link up front so that way people can actually, you know, figure out what we're talking about. But anyway, guys, thank you so much. We will hopefully do another episode sooner than later. With the coronavirus, what else can we do now?
I know, right?
So, guys, thank you again, and goodbye.